Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host for this first hour. I know all eyes on the U.S. as the upcoming election will hopefully be behind us next week. And the volatility in the markets, it really picked up steam again this week. I'm kicking off the show with Trader Vic Sparandio. Now, Trader Vic, you and I are recording this about halfway through the day on Wednesday. And this Wednesday, it's already the start of some sort of a sell-off here. We don't know how it's going to play out for the rest of this week, but investors clearly are getting nervous heading into the weekend and into that U.S. election. Let's start off with the election, though. I don't talk too much politics, and I do want to keep it focused on how the markets will react to whatever comes out of that U.S. election. But give us a little summary on how you see the U.S. election playing out and what you're going to be watching most closely for next week.
Well, as we speak, the Dow's down 800, and this was anticipated, meaning the markets coming into election day should be very cautious and in a decline, because anybody that is got gains should be considering taking those gains, hedging those gains, and nobody's buying now because there's a risk. If the risk is the way the world would see it, is Biden wins and the Democrats take the Senate. And then you'd have really what it amounts to a party now that has turned socialist. They're not the Democrats of the 60s and 70s. And this is a completely dominated party by radicals. So the markets should get killed should that event happen, that Biden and the Senate is taken over by the Democrats. And meanwhile, the House stays Democratic. So here's what is important, and it has to do with how to read the markets. Now, let's put this into context. In Portland and Seattle and Illinois and New York and other places in the country, you see these riots, burning of businesses. It happened in Philadelphia last night. The excuse is an African-American gets killed. It doesn't matter how he gets killed, why he gets killed. Some policeman kills him for even great reasons, but it doesn't matter. So everybody loots. The police stand down. The businesses go up in flames, and there's nothing you can do. Now, couple this, and I'm going to come back for a minute because there's a point to New York where they have these lockdowns and shutdowns. And they don't do it for 2 weeks like it was talked about. This is going on months. So businesses are going, just closing, and there's no way they're going to come back in the short run. So when we say all this, what the important reaction is to this election is what's supposed to happen. Now, not what's going to happen, because nobody really knows for sure, although we had this scenario that's been in the press and is fairly well known called the Red Mirage. I'll just outline it. It's basically that on Election Day, Trump is going to win, maybe win very big. And then with these mail-in ballots, which are going to come in after Election Day, after November 3rd, that the Democrats are going to overtake that because most of them are not going to go vote. They're doing this thing by mail. And the question is, are they going to steal this with phony ballots and whatnot? Now, by the way, just for the record, I try to find a country in the world that allows votes to be cast after Election Day. I couldn't find any country in the world. There's roughly 215 oddball countries. There's about 196, members of the UN. The point is, this is unbelievable, and is part of this scenario where I say, what is supposed to happen? And what's supposed to happen when you put all of what's gone on in context with the closing down of businesses, which Trump opined on, but he didn't cause that. That's the governors of New York and California who are still closing down. In New York, the restaurants are still not open. So the key is the economy has gone down the tubes. The GDP comes out tomorrow. It's going to be a big. But that's because of the government spending and the Fed. And it's not, doesn't mean it's going to happen again. It's a one-time deal, just like the down, the decline was a one-time deal. So it's going to be up 30-plus tomorrow, GDP. So that's markets should respond somewhat positively to that, although it's well-known. So today, it's more the COVID count is going up, the threats of shutdown, so the markets are selling off. But it also is in conjunction with coming into this weekend, people, if they're intelligent, you know, they want to be cautious. So there's hedging and selling, big profits in the stock market from the end of March. So most people would want to put that cash, that because if Biden wins, he's going to change the capital gains rate, et cetera, et cetera. Now, so when I say things are supposed to happen, what's supposed to happen is Trump should win by a landslide, legitimately, meaning even after the third. Why? Because the people don't legitimately blame him for a virus that is all over the world to varying degrees, but is affecting the world. I mean, he's not the guy. I mean, they use this in the press to paint him to be a bad guy. But he's no different than any other leader in France or England where these COVID cases are supposedly going up. And so he's the only guy that really cares about the economy. The Democrats don't. They want it bad. So what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to see a landslide victory for him, and you're supposed to see the Senate remain in Republican hands and the House lose. Now, if it doesn't do that, what does it say? It says the people of the United States still don't get it. And really, the economy is in for very rough times coming into the future. So in other words, what you're doing here is using the election of what's supposed to happen to predict the future economy. This is not predicting what's going to happen to any asset class next week. It's predicting if the people don't vote this way, they don't understand. So they'll keep voting in. I mean, if you look at these Democratic states, they're the big losers here. Almost every red state, as they call it, Republican state, is doing very well. I used an example before with you about South Dakota, who didn't close down, whose unemployment is 3%, their GDP is about the same. They had very few cases. Just like if you look at Sweden, Sweden's no different than anywhere else where people close down. So it's a mixed bag how this thing transfers, how contagious it is, and how it works, okay? A lot of the elderly people are the ones at most risk. 41% of the deaths are caused by nursing homes, and the average age is in the high 70s. So it's not it's a very contagious disease, but it's not a deadly disease like Ebola would be, the worst disease. So coming back to the markets now, sans this election, which I'm telling you to watch for the future, the way the American public is going to vote. If you see a landslide, if you see these changes, it's very good for the future. It's very good for next year. If it doesn't work out that way, next year is going to be a very poor, in my opinion, year for the economy and probably therefore for stocks. Because again, the Fed is limited now to what it can do. It's at zero. It's done QE. Continue to do QE, but it's really only helping a certain asset classes. Not even real estate is going to be helped by the Fed doing QE now. So what's the key thing in my mind that one has to watch? The dollar. The dollar affects everything. And the dollar has to be going down. Today it's up big, by the way, it's up a half a cent. But it's got to be going down for the U.S. to pick up and the world to pick up, in my view, because our goods are going to become cheaper. It's the only way for the U.S. to get out of its doldrums. It's got to create some inflation so commodities come back, which is a huge part of the market. The stocks are not going to care because the Fed has said we're going to let inflation run hot. So they've got about a year's grace, no matter what inflation does. But if the dollar rallies, the world goes into deflation, and we are in worse shape than we were in April. So the key, one big key to watch is the dollar. And if I was Trump and I won, the one thing I'd be doing is telling the Treasury, who controls most of what happens to the dollar, to sell the hell out of it. Not a crash, but consistently knock it down from where it is now in 93-ish to 80 by the end of next year. If it did that on a slow, steady basis, the United States economy would do very well. Stocks would do very well. Commodities would roar. Gold would roar. Things would really turn around. But if the dollar stays strong or goes up, we're in very bad shape. So those are the things that I think are important coming into next week.
Okay. Let's talk about the dollar, though, because the dollar has been in a downtrend ever since it spiked on the tail end of all of the lockdowns, or actually when the lockdown started. The dollar reached almost 104, now trading right around this 93 region. Do you think that the Treasury Department, even the Fed, actually has the ability? To me, that seems like they'd just be flooding the market with dollars to push it down. But even recently, when we have seen the Fed step up some of their buying or some of their printing of money, it hasn't had a huge effect to the downside. Moving down to 80 is a major move lower.
Yeah. Well, it came, you know, from 70 back in the great recession, as they say. But so 80 would be a moderate, would be not a horrible decline, would be a normal decline if you looked at the history of the dollar going back to the 20s. And how it moves cyclically. But neither here nor there, the decline in the dollar has helped the economy rebound that it's going to do this quarter. It's also helped stocks. It has harmed bonds slightly. Bonds are off their peak. But it hasn't, it helped gold, of course. But it has helped the economy net-net rather than hurt the economy. Now, a 12% decline from the peak, from the very top, that 104 level-ish, is not, I mean, that's not material. Okay, if you got it down to 80, that would be normal. About 25% to 30% is the cyclical movements of the dollar. I have this going all the way back, and I'm going off my memory, but 25% is about what it does when it sells off, and it rallies about 40%, 35 to 40% when it goes up. So it's got to go down much more. And it's up to it's up to the Treasury to knock it down. That's really the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which had funded with $100 billion back in the 30s. It's been replenished and whatnot, but it's basically controlled by the Treasury.
Okay, well, fair enough. Let's see exactly how that all plays out. And again, we just need to get this election behind us. Do we need to be concerned, though, about another just washout decline like we saw back in March for the markets broadly?
Well, in my world, if Biden wins and the House and Senate go Democrat, you could bet on it, because there'll be material changes that are going to be negative for investors long term. What the Democrats would say is they're going to spend like $5 trillion, you know, to offset the higher taxes, which is the name of the game for them. But in this case, because debt is so high, higher taxes are going to get you less revenue, and the $5 trillion they're going to spend is going to go directly onto the $27.1 trillion now. And by the way, in the pocket of the Treasury, there's another $1.8 trillion that they have that's been allocated to them, but they haven't spent it yet. So it's not part of the deficit. So the deficit's really $29 trillion. It's just that they can't put it on the books that way until they actually spend the money. But the Treasury is hoarding it, okay, or the Senate, which is not spending that money. So that it's still in the Treasury's pocket, but until they spend it, they can't mark it as a debt. You see what I mean? So it's really $2 trillion higher than what's stated, which is 27, almost 2 in round numbers, $27.2 trillion. But my view is that would cause a crash because of the extreme radical changes that they would put through. If you look at Goldman Sachs, they're going to think things are much better than I would, because they're going to say, okay, they're going to spend all this money. That's good. Yes, that is for the GDP. That is good, but it's not good for the long term of the United States, and it's going to cause tremendous disallocations from investor capital.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see how that all plays out, too, because in all fairness, I think some people have said that investor capital has been misallocated in these markets for a long time, driving these tech stocks higher. Let's talk a little bit about the makeup of this recent market rally. Fine, the market's selling off today, but it was closing in on all-time highs, and it was being led with stronger breadth, the rotation out of some of the high-flying tech stocks into the lagging sectors was happening, and that's what was helping support these markets. What was your view of the makeup of the markets and how they did continue to climb closer to all-time highs heading into a hotly contested election?
Well, the breadth figures, yeah, they made a high about 2 weeks ago, and that was primarily, you also saw the Russell 2000 rally, the small caps, and what people were doing there is selling some of the really big winners in the tech and moving it to the things that are on their bottom and basically buying cheap and selling dear. And so those are strategic movements within the fund world and the pension fund world. So, I mean, that's normal if you think this quarter is going to be big and you think the fourth quarter, which is scheduled to be up 4%. Now, the mix of who's going to be the victor in the election is not in there. These are just tactical trades. If you look at the breadth numbers, they correlate very highly with the Russell 2000. So if the Russell 2000 dropped, which it was because it was cheap and people were buying cheap and they were taking their profits on the big stuff, because, again, they're overpriced. I mean, the average P.E. probably on a tech stock is 40 minimum, right? So Google and Apple and things like that are going to have a 40 P.E. in round numbers. Microsoft, I looked them up once, but I haven't looked them up in a couple of months, so I'm sure they haven't changed much. So you're basically just diversifying and being intelligent. I mean, it's not wrong to switch out of things that have moved up gigantically, 30%, into things that are still were near their low and down for the year. And, I mean, Russell is probably down about 7% for the year without today. So I understand that kind of mentality that, you know, that you want to be intelligent about what you're investing in. These five or six tech stocks, they're not going to last like this forever. People are going to look for value, and they're going to go to the smaller stocks that have been beaten down.
Okay. So then, Trader Vic, sum it up in terms of where you see the best opportunity sector-wise for investors looking to take maybe longer-term positions when all this election turmoil settles.
Well, my favorite, of course, is the precious metals. And although they're in a corrective state, I look for silver to go towards 22. Today it was down a dollar. It was about 23. I'm not in front of my machine as I speak, but it's in that range. Gold was down $30, but still, you know, in a strong uptrend. The reason they've paused is because the discount of this GDP number that's coming out is well instituted. The key is the Fed, which was supposed to go to $10 trillion from its $7 trillion, it's been flat since June. The Fed has not put any money in, and because there's been no new incentive or stimulus between the Republicans and Democrats, everything is on hold. So if the Republicans win, or even if the Democrats sweep, the problem is going to be if they're 50-50 like they are now in the House and Senate. But if they sweep, you know, you'll see stimulus, and then gold will start to move up, and so will silver. So they're my favorite plays.
Okay. Well, Trader Vic, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks, as always, for taking time on this weekend show. It's always interesting to hear what you have to say, and I know our audience always enjoys hearing from you. So, Trader Vic, have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks, man.
You too. Thanks.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to talk a bit more technicals and have a bit more of a focus here on the precious metals as I am chatting with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. Now, Doc, for all our new listeners, hey, you're one of my favorite technicians and widely followed on our site for your more broad outlooks, I think, when it comes to metals, trying to ignore all this day-to-day noise and especially ignore that gold bug narrative that is always trying to say that gold needs to be moving higher. And you know what? Let's start with gold, because the trading action over the last, let's say, about 8 to 9 months has been very important. When you and I were talking about 3 to 4 months ago, we were noting how gold was consistently moving higher on a monthly basis. Now, just about 3 months ago, gold was on a 5-month run of closing the month higher. And technically on that last month, July, it made one of its biggest moves. That's when gold reached over $2,000. But now these last 3 months, whether we're looking at August, September, and October, October looks like it's going to put in a red candle for this month. That'll be 3 months in a row. Doc, what does this all mean? Playing the odds, understanding that runs don't last forever. Do you think this downward trend, these 3 months down in a row, will finally put an end to this downtrend in gold?
Yeah, I think it's encouraging, Corey, and you're right. Back in the first part of August, we had that spike at the beginning of August. And I had mentioned that if that continued, we were going to have 6 months in a row of closing highs. And that's highly unusual. And then it reversed and actually closed down for the month. And that was one of the indicators that told me we were getting close to turnaround for this precious metal market. Now, as you mentioned, if we don't have any massive move this afternoon, we're going to close down for 3 months in a row as far as a closing low. And that's encouraging because the move down has not had any massive swings. And that tells me that we could be consolidating here, but we may be consolidating for a while. Now, I don't think November necessarily is going to be a great month, but I think we're setting up for the end of the year or into the first part of next year for a little bit move higher. So that would be encouraging. And the gold stocks have, and the silver stocks on whole, have just gotten beat up again, which right now is a great buying opportunity. We're reaching the point where I'm going to start buying again, adding to positions, waiting for the next move up. So, and also what's interesting is I had mentioned a while back that the MACD was approaching the highs back in 2011 and 12, but that we price-wise, we took out the highs of back then. And that's not unusual because the MACD will probably not get as high as it was. And you often see that in charts where in a long-term rally, you won't go as high, but the pricing will go higher. The encouraging thing about the monthly chart is that this one of the main major strength indicators that I follow, which is the ADX, the black line, which is a composite of the green and red lines, which are bullish or bearish, that has a room to run yet. So this move higher might not be over. I'm sure a lot of people are starting to wonder, but it's got room to run higher yet to even get close to the 2011-2012 highs. So that is an encouraging sign, potentially, Corey.
Yeah, you know what, Doc? One thing to consider, too, is that gold is off of its highs, but it's still trading right around this $1,900 level. And quite frankly, it needed a correction, and this correction hasn't been nearly as devastating as some of the other technicians have outlined, or even some of your lower levels. But when it comes to the gold stocks, right now, gold stocks aren't even really following the gold price. They're more following the markets. And that goes hand in hand with the dollar that is at a relatively low level. A lot of gold followers have been looking at the dollar and saying, look at how weak the dollar is. That's good for gold. Quite frankly, the major relationship to pay attention to here has been the gold stocks, I think, to the underlying U.S. equity markets. When we see strength in markets, gold stocks have done okay. We see weakness, gold stocks get sold off. Very similar to what we saw this week in that shock on Wednesday, I believe it was. What are the relationships that you're watching here, Doc, when it comes to gold, gold stocks, to the dollar, U.S. markets, and anything else?
Yeah, the gold stocks and silver stocks moving lower right now, as far as I'm concerned, have nothing to do with the dollar. They talk about, oh, the dollar strengthened. Well, it's hardly strengthened at all. So I think we have parted company with the dollar right now. And it's more a function of just the general market tone right now, I think, more than ever. And if you look at a weekly chart on GDX and GDXJ, is we have a little bit more weakness here for a while, I believe. Because the MACD is still quite a ways above the neutral, but it's heading down toward it. So and like I said, I think the gold market in November will probably not do much. But we should be in position with both the gold market and the GDX and the GDXJ charts as far as weekly, the weekly outlook. We ought to be in pretty good shape by the end of November as we move into December, potentially for a move higher in a new trading range.
So, Doug, your comment earlier that gold stocks are entering or closing in on an area where you are attracted to buy them, I'm starting to think the same thing, too, in the sense of, look, a lot of these gold stocks have sold off, especially the juniors. They're going to have some catalysts coming up, and that could help move the price higher. However, I did have a conversation with John Kaiser earlier this week, and he outlined just how many shares are coming free trading in the market over the next couple months, really to the end of the year. he outlined through May and September, there was $2.1 billion worth of private placements done. In the middle of October, he did the pricing. That $2.1 billion was worth $3.8 billion. That, to me, means there's going to be a lot of shares hitting these markets selling-wise because of the fact people are going to be taking some profits and riding these warrants. How does that affect the time frame of when you think these stocks are a true buy?
You know, it's interesting he said that, Corey, because that almost correlates with what I'm seeing on the charts. That's interesting that he talked about that, and I was unaware of that, by the way. Plus, you have tax loss selling season coming up. So it kind of goes hand in hand with what I'm seeing technically, especially on the monthly charts and on the weekly charts. So I think, and I had mentioned that we wouldn't be challenging the highs until, and this was back in August, I felt we were going to reverse and not challenge the highs until December or even into 2021. And I think that's going to play out. We're not going to see the highs in this until, I think, or challenge again until 2021 now, based on what I'm seeing. So we're going to have some weakness going yet into the end of the year. But that's okay, because the positive thing is on the weekly charts, we're going to start to get more in line with the 200-week moving averages, which we left behind back in August considerably. And that's another reason I was getting bearish back then.
Doc, I also want one more comment from you regarding GDX and GDXJ. It's something I was pointing out this week on a lot of interviews, the low volume. You look at a monthly basis in October and even going back to September last month, we're seeing the lowest volume in GDX and GDXJ dating the whole way back to 2014. It just shows the lack of, well, investors putting new money or even rotating money within the sector. What does this tell to you?
Yeah, in fact, if you go back, you can go back to almost 2013. And in fact, if it drops more, we're back to where we were in 2012 and 2013. That's phenomenal. And we may start to see that, but that's going to set us up. And that's why I said months ago, you're going to have to be patient in this bull market, because it's going to be stair steps. And that's what we're seeing, Corey. And it's hard if you're an investor, because you just sit there and watch your portfolio going up and down. Now, if you were somebody like Excelsior, who does more day trading, you can trade out of some of these at higher levels, make a profit, and then wait and buy back at lower prices. But I don't like to do that sort of thing, because often you lose out on major moves. But you're going to have to be very patient here. This is a market, bull market, that I mentioned quite a while ago, that will be ongoing, I think, until 2025 at least. And so it's going to be a stair step here. And this volume loss in GDX and GDXJ just tells you that interest has dried up here a little bit.
Yeah, it really does. But hey, when that interest comes back, hopefully these companies are coming out with news and drill results to help move these stocks higher. Let's wrap it up here, Doc, with your thoughts on the election. It's what I spent most of the first two segments talking with Trader Vic about. What do you think is going to come out of this election? What really matters for the markets as well?
I'll say one thing. I think the polls are way out of whack again. You've got to look at what's happening in individual states that are swing states and other states. Trump, you know, once again, has to run the table a little bit here. But I think already Texas is looking very strong for Trump. I don't see a problem there. I think Florida, some interesting data there. If you look into it, there are two strongholds, Democratic strongholds. One of them is Miami-Dade County. And then there's Palm Beach. And right now, when you look at early voting, Republican voting in Miami Dade is actually ahead of Democratic voting. That's unheard of. And if that continues, and Palm Beach, he's competitive there. And in Broward, he's doing better in early voting. And that does not bode well for the Democrats in Florida. And I think Trump will win Ohio. And so it's going to be Arizona, North Carolina, and the industrial states that are going to determine this election. And I and the other thing that's very interesting about this election is the fact that the volume of people voting this year, back in 2016, I believe approximately 136 to 138 million people voted. But based on early results, I think you're going to see close to 150 million people voting. And you've got to ask, who are these new voters? And the last point I'll make is I think Trump will do better with Hispanics and African-American voters this time around. That may be the shocker. And so it's an extremely interesting election. And whoever is whoever wins, I don't think it's going to impact the precious metals markets that much initially, Corey.
Initially. Okay, that's a key point. You know what, Doc? I'm sure we'll spend some time talking more about this when that election is finally behind us. But hey, Doc, great having you on the show. Thanks again for taking time on this weekend show. Have a great weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Here we are wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are going to wrap up this hour with a company update from Novo Resources. I'm chatting with the president and chairman, Quentin Henny. Novo is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO and on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF. Now, Quentin, a couple news releases for us to follow up on. One coming out Thursday, October 29th. It essentially is giving a general overview, recap of the test work that is going on in Perth with this Steinert machine, testing some of these fine grain gold fractions. Now, I want you to give us a little bit more of a summary of this news release, what exactly this machine is being used for, and the importance of testing these fine grain gold fractions. Please just give us a general update here.
Okay, brief overview, or we'll call it a summary of our plans. We've got a machine that we've actually purchased. It was constructed in Cologne, Germany, and it is now in transport to Perth. It has not reached Australia yet. So this machine that we're talking about in this news release is actually the Steinert machine that's in the Steinert yard in Perth. Okay, but we've been doing ongoing work at this facility. Steinert is allowing us to use the machine for free, so it's not costing us additional funds. But we've been doing some work in preparation for the arrival of our other machine that we've purchased in this trial mining exercise we're going to do. So what have we been doing? Well, look, back in 2018, when we first started test work on mechanical sorting, the machines were not adept at sorting finer grain fraction of rock. Okay, so when you crush rock, you get big chunks, medium chunks, and little stuff. Okay, and we would screen the material, and we could sort the big chunks and the medium chunks, but the little chunks, say less than 6 to 8 millimeters in size, the stuff that's smaller than that, the machines simply could not handle it. They couldn't identify the gold particles. They didn't have a high enough resolution, and we felt that that was unsortable at that time. Okay, now what's changed here is this sorting technology has advanced. There's also been enhancement in computer processing and resolution of the image, the scanners that see the gold particles as they're passing along the conveyor belt. So now the machines can readily see very, very small particles of gold embedded in rock. Okay, so we did this test work because we wanted to understand if we could sort that fine fraction. Lo and behold, the sub 8-millimeter fraction was readily sortable. Okay, so we were able to crush and basically screen sort everything in some test samples that we brought down to Perth. We brought these samples down from Karratha. I think we collected them about 2 months ago. We brought them down to Perth, crushed them, screened them, and now we've tested sorting everything, clear down to the bug dust. I mean, basically everything that we produced went through the sorter, and it appears to be highly effective. It's sorting everything. So this is a big, big win. You know, we don't have this kind of, well, what do we do with the fines kind of situation? Now we can sort the whole lot. Okay, now, not only that, what we found is the machine was capable of identifying some of the finer grain gold that we have in what we call halo around the nuggets. The nuggets, yeah, they're often a few millimeters across. You know, they're melon seed size things, and they're easy, reasonably easy for the machine to see. But prior test work we did had trouble identifying the finer grain halo of gold that surrounds the nuggets. You know, there's a little cloud of very fine grain gold particles. Well, it turns out this machine was able to sort that gold as well. So it's now capable of seeing the very fine particles of gold that surround the nuggets and actually capture that in the mechanical sorter as well. So this is a wonderful outcome. It also gives us a clear idea of what to expect when we do our trial mining exercise here soon. Now, the guys are working very hard at getting all the permitting, all the preparation work done for the exercise at Karratha. Now, one key component of that, I'm going to just kind of lunge in here, Corey. Sorry, I don't mean to overstep, but I'm going to give you a highlight around this news release that wasn't really brought front and center, but I think is incredibly important. We have NELMA approval. NELMA is the Aboriginal corporation in the Karratha region, and they have given us consent to go ahead with the mining exercise. Okay, so this is a wonderful step. It basically gives us a green light to seeking the approvals we need. You know, the mines department and so forth, they look favorably upon having the consent of the Aboriginals prior, and we've done that. We've got their approval, and now I think, you know, it's a really a, you know, it's not a formality, but it's, you know, close to it as far as approvals from the regulatory agencies. So look, we'll get this approved. We'll do the trial exercise. I think it'll be wildly successful. Now, what's really cool, though, because we have the mill, okay, because we now own a conventional mill, we have equipment at the mill that we can now treat the concentrate from Karratha. So one of the things we want to get out of this is how much concentrate are we going to generate, right? So this test work we've been doing here recently, we're trying to get a handle on how much of a percentage of the overall mass should we expect in a concentrate. Like, let's say we mined 100,000 tons. Are we going to end up with 100 tons of concentrate, 1,000 tons, 5,000 tons? We don't know. We wanted to get those answers. This test work that we've been doing indicates that we can likely see mass pulls or concentrates in the range of less than 3%. All right. So if we mine, you know, 20,000 tons, let's say, just for hypothetical case here, out of a bulk sample site, we should see something like about 600 tons or no more than 600 tons of concentrate. That's a wonderful outcome. Okay, we can take that over to Nulligan. And then we can use the milling equipment over there to then treat the concentrates. And this is our ultimate vision. Okay, we want to be able to mine at Karratha, crush, screen, sort, produce a concentrate, ship it over to Nulligan, and actually extract the gold out of the concentrate there. This is shaping up very nicely. Everybody that's followed our story knows this is how we expect to grow production in the Pilbara region. We've got a mill now. It's about finding ways to extract value out of these nuggety assets like Karratha. And I think we're well on the path.
Okay, we got a lot to cover there, Quentin. Let's deal with the whole mining scenario then when it comes to the aspect that these crushers seem, or the sorters seem to be able to now sort everything down to the smallest fine grain gold that you have there. Does that just mean that costs should be lowered and the whole mining situation scenario should be much more straightforward? In a sense, you dig up the ground, you run it through a sorter, you create a concentrate, you ship it over to your actual mill. Is that as straightforward as it could be?
That's what we hope, yes. So here's the benefits. Okay, first of all, we're talking about a process that does not require wet chemistry. Okay, crushing, screening, and sorting is a dry process. That's a big benefit. We don't have wet chemical processing to look at now. That should make the permitting easier. It should make the capital requirements for processing at Karratha much, much lower, you know, perhaps way lower than a conventional mill. It basically puts us in a position where we can fast track the project, but also capitalize it with very low cost. What does it mean? Well, it also means that we, you know, I look at other things. Okay, for example, if we crush screen this stuff, the waste product, what could you do? Well, you could actually use that for aggregate. Okay, there's potential for added value there, as crazy as that sounds. But the other thing is reclamation. You could just use the material, go, you know, reclaim the ground, like literally put the material straight back down and then contour it and reclaim it. Okay, so this is a fantastic outcome. This is basically operating a glorified gravel operation. Means added production out in Ulligan. You know, we truck the concentrates there. It allows the company to grow its production with a very simple, cost-effective means.
So one final comment regarding the sorter and now it being able to detect fine fractions, let's say under 6 to 8 millimeters. What portion of the project, of the potential gold component, did these smaller fractions make up?
You know, once you crush rock, like you can do a gentle crush, and you usually see about 30% of the mass in that fraction, sometimes a bit more. Okay, so it was not an insignificant amount. Now, when you consider that the gold and gold nuggets tend to pop out during crushing, in other words, I don't know why, but you know, for some reason the gold tends to fall into that fraction disproportionately. There was a lot more gold in that fine fraction. So yes, this is a huge benefit. Okay, it means we can, you know, catch all those nuggets that literally popped out of the rock during crushing, and a lot of the halo material that's captured in those little particles of rock is actually also being sorted. You know, so this is a huge win.
Okay. Now, Quentin, the other comment that you made there that was kind of buried in this news release is this NELMA approval. You even mentioned you still need to get some of the other government approvals, but this was a big hurdle to get over because of the fact that you most likely weren't going to get any sort of government approvals if you didn't have the Aboriginal support. Give a little more color on how this finally came together now.
Well, look, we started our relation with NELMA back in 2017, late in the year. We, you know, a lot of people said, oh, it's going to take you, you know, months and months to get their consents for heritage, you know, approvals and stuff on our tenements. And it didn't. We were able to actually strike agreement with them back then to advance our exploration activities. And we've continued to build our relation with NELMA. So I would say, you know, the team in Perth has gone out of their way to really build a strong relation with NELMA. And NELMA recognizes that this could be a meaningful opportunity for them. You know, they're headquartered right there in Karratha, so they're right next to the project, literally. And, you know, they recognize the benefit this could generate. So they've been very supportive. You know, there's always personalities and stuff that one has to deal with in any corporation, you know, especially when you bring two companies together like us and them. But by and large, we've developed a fantastic relation, and we are absolutely delighted to be working with them. And I think we have a great basis to move forward. I mean, this approval basically green lights, you know, further mining activities and stuff. So I think this sets a great foundation for working with NELMA over the many, many years to come.
All right, let's also talk about the news release that came out today on Friday, October 30th. General operational update. What do you want to highlight in terms of this update?
Yeah, look, the team, I'm going to make it really clear. I'm in Colorado, and the team in Perth is the one operating this. I think you can see from the level of detail in both yesterday's news release and today's news release, we have an absolutely fantastic team. They are all over this thing. And they have every aspect of each of these projects thought out, getting Karratha going, but also getting Beaton's Creek going. So the operational update that was provided today, largely derived from Chris Martin's work. Chris is the general manager of our operation there at Beaton's Creek. It talks about a number of things. So firstly, at Beaton's Creek on site, we've got site development going. We've actually cleared the roads and stripped topsoil and stuff, and we're doing the first round of grade control drilling right now. Okay, this is important. You do grade control drilling to understand where the gold layers are and how you're going to mine it and so forth. So this is really a critical first step. One of the more interesting things we have going there is we're going to use the Chrysos technique for assaying. Chrysos is a gamma ray spectrometry technique where you basically put crushed rock into a canister. And this is especially useful for coarse nuggety gold, which we have. But you put the canister in a machine, it bombards it with gamma rays. It then looks at the radiation that comes back out of the canister, and it can ascribe the spectra that's kicked out by gold and quantify how much gold is in that rock. Okay, this is a new technology, but it's now been lab certified. It was developed by CSIRO in Australia, which is basically a governmental research branch. It is fantastic. It's going to take the mining industry forward. Okay, this is one of those incredible quantum leaps that is going to transform the mining industry. And Noble, quite frankly, we are the first ones that did commercial work with these guys. Okay, we started using Chrysos back in when the heck was it? I think it was latter part of 2017, if memory serves. We actually started using Chrysos. We did some test work on Beaton's Creek material back then, and we compared it to screen metallic assays and things like this to make sure it was working. Saw fantastic results, and now we are probably going to use Chrysos at a mine level. Like we would like to buy one of these machines and use it for grade control assays on a routine basis. So that's all good. Now on the mill side, we have a lot of update there too. Look, the mill was in reasonably good shape, but there were some things that desperately needed addressing, and some of those include lining the tanks. The tanks were rusting. They were not well kept. Maintenance was a bit rough, but the team we have and this engineering firm that we've contracted have done a fantastic job fixing everything up. We are truly fixing the mill up to be operational for many, many years to come. We want to treat this as though we will be mining here for the next 20, 25 years, something like that. So we're taking this very seriously and making sure everything is up to snuff so that when we flip the thing on, we are ready to go without any more headaches for many years to come.
All right. Well, Quentin, let's wrap it up with a question that I have a listener that's wanted me to ask for a couple interviews. Unfortunately, I forgot about it in the last interview, so I'm going to ask it now. I want your view of how Novo Resources is going to reward investors, shareholders in the future. The listener outlines, is it going to be dividends? Is it going to be gold coin distribution? Is it going to be JVs, takeovers? Give us a little thought here, please.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so pretty much all of the above. But let's talk about this in detail. So let's first look at Novo, where we are now. We do have a loan facility with Sprott Lending. Look, our ambition is going to be to pay that off as quick as humanly possible. Okay, I'm not a fan of debt. We did take on the debt here to get this deal done, but we will pay it off as quick as possible. Once we do, then the company does have freedom to look at dividends and things like this. Okay, I'm not going to say that we have a dividend policy set in place yet. That will be set in place once we get better clarity on when we're going to pay the debt and so forth. And, at that time, what gold prices are and so forth and so on. But I would say this, at a fundamental level, if you look at all the board members we have and management, You know, we are definitely of the on the conservative side as far as we're not going to squander cash by any stretch. We will use it very effectively, either for growth of the company or through dividends to shareholders, or a combination of both. Now, part of that is a kind of a fundamental, view that the money, the gold is a better form of money than cash. Okay, so I personally am going to push that we whatever excess cash we generate is kept in the form of gold whenever possible, rather than paper cash itself. So, you know, like actually have an account at Perth Mint or elsewhere that keeps a lot of our funds in gold. I mean, I think that's a testament to, the gold industry. Like building a strong gold company, you want to support the commodity you're in, right? So I really see that as an important component. As far as other things, look, I think you mentioned JVs and other opportunities. Look, I do have the ambition of growing Noble. I've said this many times. That's why we've taken the stakes in various companies. How these things pan out, I don't have a full crystal ball that sees that far in the future. But I would say that Novo would like to grow, and we will be a much bigger company in a few years' time. I would also say that where there's opportunity, say, for some of the shares that we have in various other companies, they're either going to be the basis, like a toehold for acquisition, or they're going to be a wonderful reward for our shareholders as a form of a dividend or something like that. But we are here to create value. Okay, that's it. Bottom line, here to create value and reward our shareholders.
All right. Well, Quentin, I appreciate the update here. A lot of news, a lot of kind of general updates, but hey, if anybody has any follow-up questions, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. In full disclosure, I am a Novo shareholder, and we will be following up as more news hits the market. Quentin, everybody else, thank you very much for taking time on your weekend. Thank you for all tuning in, and thank you for all the emails that I continue to receive. I know the market has been a bit volatile and crazy, a bit schizophrenic, really, but hopefully next week we'll clear up at least some of this worry and some of what is handcuffing, I believe, some of the sectors that we talk about quite regularly. So, hey, everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.